Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. But stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you back for another week on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors. But we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and I think this week we'll start with the big sports story of the week. Now, sports, generally sports is not something we cover here at the Weekly Worldview. We have sort of a slogan here, no sports, no sports analogies. And no crotch humor. We generally avoid all such topics. But this week, we've got the U.S. female soccer team who is going up today, I believe. Is it happening live right now? Going up against Japan for the World Cup. The World Cup, I said. Now, I'm sure we all remember where we were in 1999 when that U.S. female soccer player ripped her shirt off. Do you remember where you were? No, you don't. You don't remember that at all. I think it was 1999. I'm not sure exactly when it was, but anyway, I'm finding it hard to get excited, folks. As much as I'm trying to get pumped up about the U.S. women's soccer team and the World Cup and the opportunity to bring the cup back to America. But number one, it's soccer, okay? And number two, it's girls' soccer. So, I mean, if that's the best we've got, should we even be participating? I don't know. Anyway, let's move on from the sports story. I'm going to scratch that off. Okay, well, I did my best because I know sports must be very interesting and entertaining because everywhere I go, I hear sports, sports, sports on the radio, on the TV, with the people with their baseball hats and their sports shirts and the painted faces and all of that. I just find it hard to get fired up about. But if you're fired up, well, that's all that really counts. And I hope you enjoy watching the match out on the pitch in the 104th minute when it's 0-0. And some Japanese woman scores the winning goal. Yes, I'm rooting for Japan. I'm willing to admit it right now. My loyalties are divided. All right, let's move on from that story. Let's get to more serious news. And we will get to serious news later. But first, let's go to Austria from the BBC. An Austrian atheist has won the right to be shown on his driver's license photo wearing a pasta strainer as religious headgear. Nico Alm said the spaghetti sieve was a requirement of his religion. He's a self-confessed atheist and says he belongs to the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, a light-hearted faith, he says, a light-hearted faith, whose members call themselves Pastafarians. Well, that's kind of cute. I'll give him credit for being mildly amusing. He says the group's website states, quote, "The only dogma allowed in the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster is the rejection of dogma." Unquote. That's their only dogma, is the rejection of dogma. So they are confused, they are mildly amusing, and it makes for a funny picture and a kind of a cute story. And as we go to the broadcast today, we don't have any reports yet of Christians threatening to blow up his house, burn down his neighborhood, or cut off his head. Christians are generally smirking and chuckling at the story, and then some of us are praying for this poor, wayward soul. Although, don't count me among them yet. I may be persuaded to pray for Mr. Alm as I try to be a more spiritually aware person. And I know I'm supposed to care about the eternal destiny of people who openly mock, reject, and make fun of the living God, their creator, and the judge of the universe. I know I'm supposed to care. But when I see a fellow with a spaghetti strainer on his head, and by the way, this whole thing about the flying spaghetti monster, that's one of the oldest atheist hacksaws that has ever been sawn in social discourse. The general line being, Doug, there's more evidence for a flying spaghetti monster than there is for some all-powerful God who created the universe. And like that. So it's something that I've been hearing probably for 15 years, this spaghetti monster thing. So while you might think this fellow is creative, he's really not. He's just repeating stuff that he's heard from other atheists. And it'll be interesting to chat with him on Judgment Day. Sans spaghetti strainer. That's right. No spaghetti strainer on the head on Judgment Day. All right. Now, on to genuinely serious news. Let's go to Dallas, because many of us have held out hope that Texas is the last hope, and that somehow all free people will be able to flee to Texas once the communists complete their takeover here in the United States. Did I say communists? I didn't mean to use such a hackneyed phrase from the conservative movement, but I like to call them just commies, pinkos, leftists, liberals, progressives. I mean, you pick your nomenclature. We know what they are. And they're all about, well, they're all about what Barry Ho talked about in his campaign. Let's go to the story. The fruits, by your fruit, by their fruits, you shall know them, right? We all know that line from the Bible. Well, not all of us, but some of us know that line from the Bible. Well, here's what's happening in Dallas. The fruits of the labor, of the labor movement, I suppose. At least those who adamantly support the labor movement. You know, the aforementioned commies, leftists, liberals, pinkos, socialists, progressives, all of that. Dateline Dallas, at least 8 people were injured last Thursday morning while scrambling to line up for a limited number of Dallas County rental vouchers. People lined up to apply for Dallas County Section 8 housing vouchers. Now, many of you in my listening audience are not familiar with Section 8. If you're in the Army, you know that Section 8 means you're crazy and you're going to be discharged. If you're not in the military, if you're just an average citizen who can't get out of bed before noon and doesn't feel like getting a job, Section 8 is your way of getting housing. It's government subsidized housing. You fill out some forms and tell them that you don't make any money and you're lazy, and then they say, okay, well, we'll pay for part of your house so you can continue to be lazy and destroy the country. So all these people lined up in Dallas, hundreds of people, according to this article from WFAA in Dallas, hundreds of people rushed the line, causing moments of unruliness. Yes, applicant Jordan Spivey, he's an applicant, he's lined up for the government cheese. He suffered cuts and scrapes. I'm sorry, she. Jordan, yeah. Jordan, she suffered cuts and scrapes. Another applicant, Ada McKenzie, says, quote, it was a madhouse. People were pushing and fighting. What? Yeah, it was like an Ozzy Osbourne concert with rush seating. People were falling all over themselves.
They don't do that anymore.
Ozzy doesn't trigger that kind of response anymore.
Ozzy's fans are...
Who should I... It's like a Justin Bieber concert with rush seating. I don't know.
I don't know.
7 people were treated by paramedics. Now, there's no word on how the paramedics will be paid for their services, but one thing I can tell you is none of these Section 8 applicants are going to pay the paramedics. The paramedics are probably going to get stiffed on this one, but then there'll be some government funds made available. They'll be given some cheese. So, folks, the fundamental transformation that Mr. Obama talked about is obviously well underway, even deep in the heart of Texas. That's right. That's just great. As if we needed more depressing news about the direction of the culture. Well, here it is, folks, from the Culture File. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle. Public schools in California will be required to teach students about the contributions of, yes, you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered Americans starting January 1st, 2012, after Governor Jerry Brown signed a controversial bill to add the topic to the social sciences curriculum in California's public school system. Textbooks, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, must now include information on the role of LGBT Americans, as well as Americans with disabilities. So, I mean, if you're in a wheelchair, that's got to be annoying. To be lumped in with the homosexuals, You know, just because you're disabled, now you're lumped in with the homos. But I guess since the blacks didn't raise much of a ruckus when they lumped all the black people in with the homosexuals, I guess the next victims are going to be the wheelchair-bound and otherwise disabled or handicapable, as we like to say. Governor Brown said in a statement, quote, "History should be honest," unquote. Yeah. He says, "This bill revives existing laws that prohibit discrimination in education and ensure that the important contribution of Americans from all backgrounds and walks of life are included in our history books," unquote. That's Jerry Brown out in the formerly great state of California, which at any moment could be struck by a massive earthquake and literally be sucked down into the San Andreas Fault. Could happen at any moment. What's that now? Yes, all backgrounds. People Christian of all backgrounds. What's that?
Christian.
No, I didn't see Christians mentioned here, but I sort of appreciate not being lumped in with the homos.
Yes,
I'm kind of okay with that.
Okay.
I mean, I know what side Jerry Brown's on. I know what side I'm on. And never the twain shall meet. Anyway, the governor called the legislation historic, and I agree with that. It is historic, the idea that the government will now be defiling the minds of young people officially. I mean, they've been doing it for years, but now it's official in California. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, the law is the first of its kind in the nation. And you know how it goes with California. As goes California, so goes the rest of the nation. So it'll just be, it won't be 2 or 3 years before these are, before it's in Texas, before they've infested Texas. And then where will we go? For crying out loud. Tonga? Back to hoping for Tonga? I don't know. I haven't checked in on Tonga lately. Yeah, it sounds pretty good. Anyway, I have anything, any more? Throughout the debate on the measure, backers noted the recent spate of suicides among young LGBT people. What do you mean, the spate of suicides? Suicide among lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people has been epidemic ever since they came pouring out of the closet, or even when they were hiding in the closet. They beat each other, and they kill themselves, and it's fairly well documented. But it's no longer politically correct to say that the lifestyle has its pitfalls. It's all glitter and rainbows, as far as you know. So they cited this spate of suicides, and they say that this will help combat bullying that typically occurs. And also it will expose more kids to sexually charged ideas, leading to a better chance that California homosexuals will be able to reproduce. pretty disgusting. Anyway, if you send your children to the public schools, whether in California or elsewhere, you are sinning against God, and you are sinning against your children. And you will answer for that. In this life, if by chance you lose your child to the grotesque, twisted, deviant culture that's promoted in the public schools, or if your child manages to survive, you will answer in the next life for having squandered your child's opportunity at a real education, instead opting for government-funded homosexual indoctrination. Yeah, I said indoctrination, and by that I don't mean that they're going to brainwash children into becoming homosexuals, but they are. These classes and the culture in general has led to an environment where younger and younger people are willing to contemplate the idea of homosexuality. They're willing to noodle around with it in their minds, and it's generally becoming more and more acceptable to talk about it, maybe even try it. Maybe even get into the lifestyle. So, anyway, we here at the McBurney compound, we homeschool our children. And they're taught that homos make me sick. That's on their test. No. What do homos make you? The answer is sick. No, actually, we haven't introduced any type of ideas about anything regarding anything even close to anything about that.
Yeah.
Or sex in general, for crying out loud. Not looking forward to that whole thing. But that's a whole different show. We'll leave that aside. All right. Now let's go from where were we? Where we were in California. Now let's go across flyover country to New York. The four New York State Republican senators who helped push same-sex marriage across the finish line are now getting help in what may be a tough re-election battle. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg gave each Republican homosexual supporting senator over a little over 10 grand, the maximum amount allowed, according to the Daily Caller. This is an article from Newsmax.com. Recipients of the funds from Mayor Bloomberg are Senators James Oleski, Mark Grisanti, Roy McDonald, and Stephen Saland. Bloomberg, by the way, according to Newsmax, is a billionaire and, by the way, was a Democrat until 2001. So Michael Bloomberg is helping the Republican senators who helped him and Mayor Cuomo the Homo sign into law homosexual marriage in New York. So now they're now Bloomberg is in tight with these Republican senators, and guess what? It's not only Bloomberg. According to this article at Newsmax.com, Mark Grisanti, senator, who helped was one of the decisive votes in the homosexual marriage vote there in New York, has raised more than $150,000 in the second quarter for his reelection, with about a third of that coming from homosexual marriage advocates. Now, you would think that a Republican senator and homosexual marriage advocates would not necessarily be buddy-buddy and wouldn't necessarily be supporting each other, right? But they've become fast friends now that they have together participated in the legalization of homosexual marriage. And that takes us to a Bible reference. Warning, 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 we're Robinson. There are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor anyone who would ever even think about or dare even consider possibly quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw and adulterated truth is about to be uttered. Let's go to Luke, the book of Luke, the Gospel of Luke, in the 23rd chapter. This is during the trial of Jesus Christ, and Luke tells us that Herod and his men treated Jesus with contempt and mocked him. They arrayed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. That very day, Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for they previously had been at enmity with each other. But they were all buddy-buddy after that. Just like the Republicans in New York and the East Village crowd pushing homosexual marriage, they're now buddy-buddy. And that brings me to a quote I heard from David Mamet. I was listening to an interview. David Mamet was being interviewed by Glenn Beck. David Mamet, by the way, a playwright, a liberal who has had an epiphany and has converted to conservatism of some sort. David Mamet, very smart guy. And he mentioned an idea that I hadn't heard in years, but the idea was put forth by the Nazis regarding the average German citizen. There was a lot of concern in the Nazi Party that at the beginning of the persecution of the Jews, that many average Germans simply would not stand for it, wouldn't tolerate it. But the Nazis had a plan that if you could get the people to participate in the coming atrocity, especially in the early stages when it wasn't so atrocious, if you could get them to participate, then they could never go back. And the Germans did an effective job of getting the average German citizen to become a part of a system that systematically persecuted and then eventually even incinerated Jewish people. But because they had all participated, what could they say? What could they do? Now, David Mamet, in the radio interview, he tried to analogize this with liberals, socialists, progressive leftists here in the United States who are working on the fundamental transformation of the country. And Mamet said, I'm not saying the left is perpetrating an atrocity, but they are perpetrating silliness and stupidity. And they want us all to participate. And I just want to remind Mr. Mamet, who's a freshly minted conservative and quite popular among the talk radio set at the moment. He's written a new book that's got everyone a Twitter. I want to remind Mr. Mamet that the left is indeed perpetrating an atrocity. The killing of over 50 million innocent Americans, and about a third of Americans have actually participated in the atrocity. And from that, Mr. Mamet, perhaps there is no turning back.
You look like an angel, walk like an angel, talk like an angel, but I got one. You're the devil in disguise. Oh, yes, you are.
Well, I think on that note, we may have to go right to a Mitt Romney story. Let me see here. That means I have to suddenly, I have to change gears here. Yeah, let's, in fact, we'll go with this and this, and then we'll go to this. Okay, and we'll leave the others aside. Now, let's go to Mitt Romney off of that bumper. Now, by the way, there is a way to turn back, folks. Even if you've participated in the atrocity, there is a way to turn back. There is a God, there is right, and there is wrong, and you need to choose right, you need to admit when you're wrong, and you need to repent of your wrong, and you need to acknowledge God and seek Him. And if our culture would do that, there is a way to turn back from the atrocity that's being perpetrated every day that was initiated by the left, by the progressives, by the socialists, the communists, the God-haters, not to put too fine a point on it. Speaking of, let's get to Mitt Romney. We'll go to Des Moines, Iowa. Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney has a campaign ad out. I'm sorry. It's not a campaign ad. It's his campaign. His campaign said last week that he will not sign a conservative Iowa Christian group's pledge opposing homosexual marriage, which that kind of makes sense to me because I think Mitt Romney was the first Republican to institute homosexual marriage in Massachusetts, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know why anyone would be surprised that Mitt Romney will not sign a pledge opposing gay marriage. He probably would sign a pledge saying he will not marry a man. But, you know, other people, he's fine with them living a tortured life, dementing and lying to themselves, being miserable, and end up burning in hell forever. Mitt's okay with that. But as for him, he will not marry a man. We should see if he'll sign at least that much. Where's this story from? This is the Associated Press. Senator Rick Santorum and Michelle Bachmann have signed the family leader's 14-point pledge, which calls on candidates to denounce same-sex marriage rights, denounce pornography. Wow. You don't hear that very often. Who is this group? The family leader? I'm going to have to look them up. They have to denounce pornography, same-sex military accommodations, and forms of Islamic law. Yeah. By the way, big controversy, because when the family leader's 14-point pledge was first circulated last week, the introduction to the pledge stated that African-American children were more likely to be raised in a two-parent household when they were born into slavery than they are today. So the group had to apologize and prostrate themselves before the communists and the leftists and the pinkos and the radicals and the deviants. They had to prostrate themselves and beg forgiveness, and they struck that language from the document, but they say they stand by the rest of the pledge. So here we are, folks. You can't speak the truth. And the bottom line, folks, is if you look at statistics, it's true that a black child, number one, was more likely to be born, because now they're very likely to be aborted. And if they are not aborted, if they manage to survive the womb, a black child is much more likely to be born into a single-parent family than into a two-parent family. And that just wasn't the case in 1840. And that's the truth, but you can't speak the truth anymore. They've struck the truth from their document in order to appease the deviants. So you can't speak the truth. All right. Well, so Mitt Romney won't sign the pledge. You know what? That might mean that he's gay. Yeah. I mean, the queers always accuse right-wingers of being closet homosexuals. Yeah. Well, I accuse those of you who won't stand against it that maybe you're a homosexual. How about that, Mitt? I mean, I can't understand any other reason you would promote this lifestyle except maybe you're into it. I don't know. Let's see, what else? Gay marriage has been a volatile issue in Iowa in recent years and came to a head back in 2009 when the Iowa Supreme Court struck down the state's statutory ban on homosexual marriage and effectively legalized homosexual marriage in Iowa. The breadbasket of the country, the heart of the nation. Homosexuals are marrying each other in front of God and everybody. And the transformation continues. All right. Now, more about politics. This is from the politics file. Rick Perry. Didn't I have another story on Rick Perry? Should I do that first? Let's do this first. From Newsmax, Michelle Bachmann and Texas Governor Rick Perry, who is an undeclared candidate, Bachmann being declared, Rick Perry being undeclared, are basically tied at the top of the GOP pack in a joint poll by the Daily Caller and Conservative Home. They both top former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, who had led in the previous poll. So Mitt's catastrophic ride into the basement continues. He continues his slide as people begin to realize that is there anyone else? Is the Cookie Monster or Grover running? Is anyone else available? Please don't make us vote for Mitt Romney. Let's see. The author here of the article on Newsmax says, quote, "This suggests that more Republican voters are becoming engaged in the race as they find candidates who actually excite them as opposed to voting for the best option in a fairly unexciting field." The survey was sent to 2,500 self-identified conservative Republicans all across the country. And that brings us to Rick Perry. Why did I do that story? I can't remember why I cared about this story. Oh, I remember because I made the prediction that Mitt Romney's national political career was over. I made that observation several weeks ago. I stand by it. And I must say I'm enjoying watching. I appreciate the entertainment, Mitt. Thank you very much. But that brings us to Rick Perry. Rick Perry, the next savior of the Republican Party, a la George W. Bush. An article from the New York Times. Rick Perry spent his first 6 years in politics as a Democrat. Oh, okay. I suppose we could let that slide. He was probably just a wee lad. You know, still wet behind the ears, just out of college. Probably didn't know what was going on. The New York Times tells us that Rick Perry was a top Texas supporter and organizer in 1988 for Al Gore. Yeah. Okay, now 1988, let's do some math, boys and girls. That's how many years ago? Longer than I care to. It's over 20 years ago. 23 years ago? And how old do you think Rick is? I know he looks 50, but he's probably 60. So let's 60, so he would have been in his late 30s-ish when he was a supporter and organizer for Albert Gore, Democrat, and famous socialist, communist, deviant, liberal, pinko, progressive, scum. Now, Mr. Perry claims that he came to his senses when asked about his organizing and support for Al Gore. Now, folks, in 1988... I was a wee lad. I was but a 20-year-old neophyte, didn't know anything about politics. But even then I knew that only commie hippie scum voted for Democrats. It was bred into me, in my DNA. I mean, I was a conservative from way back. Even when I was a liberal, I was a conservative. Because I acted like a liberal back when I was 20-ish. Yeah. I was acting like a liberal in those days, but I still wouldn't have voted for Al Gore. I didn't know what to do in that election. I was in the military, and they didn't encourage you. I mean, they didn't make you vote, but they encourage you to vote. And in the military, when they encourage you to do something, that's like making you do something. So they encourage us to vote. I voted Republican because I knew that the Democrats were from hell. My father did a good job of brainwashing me as a young lad to know that there is a God, he is real, and he hates the Democratic Party more than almost anything else. Thanks, Dad. But Rick Perry didn't get the memo. And I'm concerned that Rick Perry is not a genuine conservative. I haven't looked into Rick's background. He's got great hair. He's one of the best-looking guys running. So chances are he will be the next president. But I doubt he's a genuine conservative. And more will come out on this after he announces that he's running for president, which is in the offing, I can assure you. All right. Now let's move on to the personhood file. Not very good news from the personhood file this week. This is a story from WorldNet Daily, one of my favorite authors, Bob Unruh. Mr. Unruh says, 14 women have died in the United States alone and several thousand have experienced adverse events after taking the abortion drug RU486. Yeah. That's according to a government report that Mr. Unruh says was, quote, quietly released, unquote. Yeah, that's right, folks. It's documented. A Food and Drug Administration document called the Mifepristone U.S. Post-Marketing Adverse Events Summary is being highlighted by Liberty Counsel, a public interest legal organization that fights on behalf of the right to life, amongst other issues. Matt Staver, founder of Liberty Counsel, says, quote, we warned that RU486 would kill and injure women, unquote. Mr. Staver, we appreciate your work. But those of us who are thinking and paying attention, we realize from the very beginning that the whole point of RU486 was to kill people. That's what it does. That's what it's for. It kills lots of women. Tens of thousands, perhaps now hundreds of thousands of women every year are killed by RU486. They're just not born yet. And by the way, tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of men are killed every year. Well, we prefer to call them babies, male and female babies. But I saw this headline, FDA confirms RU486 abortion drug kills. And I thought, duh, yeah, that's what it does. That's what it's for. But we do appreciate Liberty Counsel's efforts. And despite the fact that this drug has killed 14 women in the United States, besides the intended victims, despite that fact, sales of and manufacture and supplies and production of RU486 continue at a record breakneck pace as we swirl the drain toward the end of Western civilization, as we choke off and kill the next generation and concern ourselves somehow with clinical data about the safety of a drug intended to kill people. There is no turning back. We're back, folks. It's the Weekly Worldview. And it's a beautiful week. It's great to be alive and worshiping God. Great sermon today at Denver Bible Church, by the way. How to worship God in your daily life. I like that. You know, I can't. I've worked my job. I have to go and stand in front of groups of people, generally strangers who I've never met, and I have to demonstrate equipment and convince them that this equipment would benefit their business and make them money, and then I have to try to sell it to them. And every time before I go in, I stop and I pray to God, because I'm just not cut out for this kind of work. But he gets me through it. And I just tell him, Lord, I want to glorify you in whatever I do today. And I always manage to slip something in regarding creation or God or justice or something, even if it's in a very oblique manner, so that I can try to be a blessing to other people and try to incorporate worship into more than just my weekly visit to Denver Bible Church, where I worship there as well, by the way. And you should come on down and visit. You'd have yourself a good time and a worshipful time. And you'd be educated and equipped to go out into a world that is lost and dying and trying to suck your children down into hell with it. Be prepared. Denver Bible Church does a great job at that. All right, now, let's go to the justice file. We're going to revisit some Casey Anthony news. Yes, I apologize up front. I know that a lot of, you know, I've been, We scan by CNN and CNN headline news because for some reason we've saved them on our favorites there on the TV. And it's amazing to me that late at night, all three of the cable news networks are still covering this trial as if it's still going on. And I suppose until the ratings die down, they'll just keep doing it. But let's go to the story from the Daily Mail in London. A juror in the Casey Anthony trial has told how she received death threats and has been unable to work since the verdict. The woman has left her job and went into hiding, fearing co-workers would want her head on a platter. Her husband said before she split town, she said, quote, "I'd rather go to jail than sit on a jury like this again," unquote. That's the life of a Casey Anthony juror. According to the Daily Mail, the sensational trial sparked outrage across America when she was acquitted of murdering her 2-year-old daughter, Kaylee. One Jennifer Ford juror said there was not evidence to convict the 25-year-old mother. She said, quote, "I did not say she was innocent. I just said there was not enough evidence," unquote. So that's the state of the jury system. I'm not saying she was innocent. I'm not going to deny that there's a dead child. But look, this is America. We're surrounded by dead children. There's a good chance that a third of this jury has killed a child. So can we be shocked? Another juror, Russell Huechler, when asked why the jury didn't make a statement immediately after the verdict, he said, quote, "It was because we were sick to our stomachs to give that verdict." So here we've got jurors saying, look, we're not saying she was innocent. We just couldn't convict her. We're confused. We're idiots. We're morons. That's why we were on the jury. And now we've got one of the jurors fleeing and fearing for her life. And folks, should I? Yeah, let me do this other story because I have a related story. This is from Choctaw, Oklahoma. Sammy Blackwell was told by a woman at her workplace where she works at a convenience store. A woman confronted her and said, "Hey, you look like Casey Anthony." And the woman said, okay. And then out in the parking lot, Sammy got off work at 10:30 that night. She says, quote, "I proceeded to pull out of the parking lot, and there was that woman right behind me. She drove a few miles and says the woman suddenly rammed her van into the back of her truck because she thought she looked like Casey Anthony." The woman who was mistaken for Casey Anthony then pulled into a parking lot to get away. And she says the woman drove and hit her van again, causing her vehicle to flip 2.5 times, wow, landing on the driver's side. And the woman says, "I just laid there and played dead."
What is it there?
What? How is that funny? How do you laugh at...
I just played dead.
She had to play dead, yeah.
Sorry.
She's so terrified, right, that this woman's going to kill her. This woman says that the lady who hit her car was ranting and raving. She said, "I was trying to hurt babies, I was killing babies, and she was going to stop it before it happened again." Mm. Folks, this is why God laid out a justice system that works, where the guilty are pronounced guilty and punished based on reasonable evidence, 2 or 3 pieces of reasonable evidence. As God laid out a justice system to prevent vigilantism. And now what Casey Anthony just got out of jail today, this morning, in the wee early morning hours, in the dark. And Casey Anthony's going to have to live in the dark for quite a long time to avoid vigilantism, which is a sin and a crime, by the way. But we've got a justice system, folks. It's just a system that promotes vigilantism. It drives people insane. Your average person has a hard time computing the idea that this mother murdered her child in broad daylight, lied about it, got away with it, and is walking out of jail. The average person, myself included, I mean, I don't want to hurt Casey Anthony physically. I'm not going to chase her down and stalk her. But I am upset, and my brain is having a hard time processing the data because it just doesn't add up. And there are a lot of weak-minded people out there who are going to be driven by this verdict, well, to do things that are criminal and sinful. against Casey Anthony. And the problem is that the justice system didn't do its job. And so now there are misguided vigilantes who may think it's their place to find justice for Casey. But I can tell you this, folks, if you're riled up about this and it's bothering you, keep in mind that that wasn't the only judge that Casey Anthony will stand before. And on Judgment Day, there will be justice for Casey Anthony. And there's no need for any of us to try to dispatch her there any faster. I'm sure that Casey Anthony is going to experience justice. Let's just leave it at that. I don't want to go on too much about this. All right. One more from the justice file. From Tacoma, Washington. I wasn't even sure I wanted to do this story because it's so disgusting and gross. But sometimes you just gotta get it out there so people understand how dire the situation is. Tacoma, Washington, a man accused of child sex crimes is allowed to view pornography in his jail cell. Huh? Yes, you see, Mark Gilbert, according to the Seattle Times, is acting as his own lawyer in the case, and that means he must be allowed to review the evidence, and he is reviewing it in his jail cell.
Ew.
That's the evidence that he made. According to the article, more than 100 videos were seized from his home after he was arrested in 2007. How's this guy alive in 2011 if they found 100 pieces of child pornography in his house 4 years ago? There, right there again, folks. It's just a system that promotes insanity and cultural tension by letting people like this live. And not only letting him live, they're letting him... Anyway, he's accused of using money and alcohol to lure more than a dozen boys to his home where they were molested. And not only is he still alive, now because he's acting as his own lawyer, he's allowed to look at the evidence of the crimes that he committed. I don't know what to say about that, folks. But what I said about vigilantism still stands, as difficult as that is to swallow. All right. Now, let's move on to some funnier news. Funny but disturbing in a comedic kind of way. This would be considered black comedy. This is from ABC News. Starting July 16th, McDane's restaurant in Pittsburgh will ban children under the age of 6 from its dining area. And the applause was overwhelming. Yeah, I know, folks. It's hard to go into a restaurant or a grocery store anymore because of the children that are just out of control, because their parents haven't been taught how to train or discipline their children. And the children are not being raised in the fear and admonition of the Lord, and it's Lord of the Flies at your average McDonald's anymore. Well, this restaurant, McDane's in Pittsburgh, is taking a stand: no children under 6. Now, according to this article from ABC, this seems to be legal because federal law forbids discrimination on racial or religious grounds, but there is no blanket protection for children. Now, boy, is that an understatement. We can not only keep children out of our restaurants because they're annoying, but in America, there's no blanket protection for children. You can kill them in the womb and dispose of them in the garbage or sell their body parts for research. So rarely has a truer statement been uttered by ABC News than, "There is no blanket protection for children in the United States of America." Now, according to this article, this restaurant in Pittsburgh, McDane's, may be taking a page out of the old Salty's catalog in North Carolina. That's a restaurant in North Carolina. Last year, Old Salty's, a seaside restaurant, posted a sign in its front window that read, quote, "No screaming children allowed," unquote. Yeah. I mean, it's amusing, but it's also a milepost on the road to hell, okay? And it's basically, it's the logical outcome in a society that has banned discipline and then actually kills millions of our own children every year. This is to be expected. Another signpost has been passed. You know, I heard, I think it was Glenn Beck, as a matter of fact, saying that our culture is passing all the exits as we race toward destruction. There's no more exits on the freeway. And the two biggest exits that have been passed were passed shortly before I was born, I do believe. And that was the legalization of the killing of innocent people and the promotion of homosexuality above heterosexuality. And that's been going on now for 40-some-odd years. Those exits were passed a long, long time ago. So if we're passing exits now, they're really just minor side issues at this point. I think there's some economic issues, and I think Mr. Beck is talking about a race toward the destruction of Israel. But I just wanted to appropriate Mr. Beck's analogy and use it for my own purposes. And with that done, let's move on into the health file. We've got a couple of related stories here from the health file from Reuters. Scientists have found a superbug strain of gonorrhea in Japan that is resistant to all recommended antibiotics and say it could transform a once easily treatable infection into a global public health threat. It's called H041 or H041, and they say it cannot be killed by any current recommended treatments for gonorrhea. Yeah, the Swedish Reference Laboratory for Pathogenic Neisseria, who discovered the strain with colleagues from Japan, describe it as both alarming and predictable. Alarming and predictable, not unlike the story about the screaming children at the restaurants we talked about earlier, or the people piling on top of one another and stepping on each other's throats in order to get Section 8 housing. It's alarming, but it's predictable, not unlike this super strain of gonorrhea that's now reared its ugly head there in Japan. They say the fact that the strain has been found first in Japan also follows an alarming pattern. They say Japan has historically been a place for the first emergence and subsequent global spread of different types of resistance in gonorrhea. I mean, that's... So I guess if you're playing against the Japanese soccer team, I guess the American girls don't want to, like, get any spit on them or anything. Japan's been a place for the emergence and subsequent global spread of different types of resistance in gonorrhea. I didn't know that Japan held that rather nefarious title, but apparently they do. Unfortunately, according to the article, gonorrhea is one of the most commonly sexually transmitted diseases, with the number of cases estimated at around 700,000 a year, mostly amongst the staff of the U.S. State Department under Hillary Clinton, at least in the past few years. Perhaps the State Department giving Japan a run for its money and becoming the vector for all social diseases. They're under the strong hand of Hillary Rodham Clinton. Now, in a related story, we're talking about the super strain that can't be killed and is only getting stronger and is resistant to all efforts to contain it. In a related story, Ben Bernanke told Congress that a new stimulus program is in the works. The clearest indication yet that the central bank is contemplating another round of monetary easing. Monetary easing. That's a new term that the Obama administration invented. And the leftist, communist, pinko, scum, heathen, deviant, homo media has adopted as if it is gospel carved in stone. Monetary easing, that means printing money. Or more accurately, the Fed buying bonds from the government and producing that money out of just nowhere. That monetary easing may be on its way, says Ben Bernanke, and there ain't no penicillin shot for this one. I got another quote from Ben Bernanke. Tell the boys to turn their guitars down. We have to get back to the show. Bernanke is maintaining that temporary factors such as high food and gas prices have slowed the economy, hence the need to print more money. Anyway, Ben, these don't seem like temporary, what does he call it? These don't seem like temporary factors, high food and gas prices. They seem almost a result of national monetary policy. Mr. Bernanke, I know that you wouldn't know anything about that. Certainly not accusing Mr. Bernanke of anything. His hands are tied. He does. All these temporary and nebulous factors are swirling around, and we need easing, monetary easing. That's another thing I noticed this week was that the press has adopted the idea of using the term revenues instead of tax increases. They don't even say revenue increase, they just say revenue. We need additional revenues, especially from rich people. And everyone goes along with it, even Fox News, who are ostensibly conservative, but in fact are deviants from the pit of hell, for the most part. I think there's a couple of bright spots on Fox News. Am I wrong on that?
I don't see it anymore.
Haven't seen any bright spots on Fox News. Deviants from the pit of hell, convincing willingly ignorant small-c conservatives that they're conservative, and that if you watch Fox News, you can feel more conservative and feel like you're doing something to save your country while it goes to hell in a handbasket all around you. All right. Now, do I want to do this on Michelle Bachmann? I really don't care, but yeah, I think I do want to do this. From Lake Elmo, Minnesota, a homosexual activist undercover video is drawing unwanted attention to a counseling clinic co-owned by Michelle Bachmann, presidential candidate. In the video, a counselor is seen saying that sessions and counseling could help build up the patient's desire for women. This is a homosexual who goes in undercover, a la Live Action and Lila Rose and all those. Remember how she used to go in and bust Planned Parenthoods? In fact, I think she still does that. Well, this is the homosexual's answer to that. They go in and try to bust people who say that maybe you could possibly come out of the homosexual lifestyle if you want to. So this homo went in and shot this video. The counselor says, quote, "God created us all for heterosexuality." And the homo says, "He said that twice to me. He said twice that God created all of us for heterosexuality. Can we kill him? Can we kill him? Can I kill him? You want to kill him with me? Can we kill him?" So who's the homosexual? His name is John Becker, and he has yet to undergo sex reassignment surgery, so he's apparently still just a homosexual man. But he aspires one day to be transgendered. Anyway, I watched the video. It's not very damning, I must say, on the part of the... it's not very damning toward the clinic, in my opinion. Marcus Bachmann is the... he's the doctor at the clinic. He holds a doctorate in clinical psychology. Oh, now that's kind of embarrassing for Michelle. But I don't think we can hold the fact that her husband is a professional. I can't say that on the air, darn it. I have a phrase for clinical psychologists. How can I can't do it in a family-friendly way. I've just got to leave that aside. I hate that. When something is so vulgar that the only way to accurately describe it is by using a vulgar term, and I can't use that term because I don't like to use that kind of language on my show. Let's just say that Marcus Bachmann is a psychologist, and we'll have to leave it at that. But we can't hold that against his wife. The site advertises the clinic's Christian affiliation. They say it's a Christian clinic. What would you expect if you're a deviant? Let's say you're a heroin addict and you go to a Christian clinic. Do you expect them to say, well, Jesus would want you to celebrate your heroin addiction? What if you're a thief or an adulterer? Oh, come on in. Jesus would want you to identify with your adultery, and let's celebrate it together and just find out who you are. And let's just explore that and expand on that. What would you expect? You come in, you say, you know what? I'm a homosexual. I'm depressed. I really want out of this lifestyle. Can you help me? And a Christian counselor would say, Jesus Christ can help you. Jesus Christ can help you change your mind about anything that's destructive and evil and wicked. Like sodomizing other men, committing adultery, stealing and shooting heroin. All of the above. Christian counseling, you would think, would help. And so this homo shouldn't be surprised at what he heard from this counselor, but obviously it's just a big sting operation. And of course, a willing press treats this as if it's the biggest story of the decade. And Lila Rose can't get an interview anymore, even though she had Planned Parenthood on videotape, offering to hide the fact that young women were basically counseled not to admit that they were raped. But that story doesn't really bear on anything that you'd be interested in, so we'll just leave that aside, and instead we'll focus on this homosexual here at the Bachman Clinic. Oh, by the way, Marcus and Michelle Bachman's clinic have collected at least $137,000 from Medicaid. So you see, folks, once you can get people to participate in an atrocity, it's very, very easy to ensure that they will support you as you go forward. Yeah, did I call Medicaid an atrocity? It is an atrocity. Not on the scale of the Holocaust or legalized child killing. Not on that scale, but it is an atrocity. But will Michelle Bachman stand for the repeal of Medicare? Not in 1,000,006 years, never. She's participated in it. She's tainted. All right, now let's go to the war file as we're running out of time rapidly. Do I have any more news that's entertaining? I just don't know, folks. I wanted to be more entertaining this week. I really did. I mean, I came to the show upbeat and happy and wanting to do some fun stuff, but then I started reading the news, and it's just not working out, and I apologize for that. And I appreciate the fact that you're sticking with me. Let's go to the war file. From Newsmax, a man who killed the half-brother of Afghan President Hamid Karzai was a longtime U.S. ally. His name is Sardar Mohammed, and he was a police commander who met on several occasions with U.S. and British military officials. Sources said that the Taliban somehow won Mohammed's allegiance in recent months. Well, his name's Mohammed. How do you think the Taliban could have won his allegiance? Did I say his name was Mohammed? Okay, so Sardar Mohammed shot and killed Hamid Karzai's half-brother, called the most powerful political leader in southern Afghanistan. Turns out he was a friend of ours, was being the operative term there. And then just a few days later, from Newsmax, a suicide bomber hiding explosives in his turban blew himself up last Thursday during a memorial service for the assassinated half-brother of Hamid Karzai. So not only does a friend of ours, an ally of ours, kills the half-brother of the president and a political leader in Afghanistan, but at his memorial service, a guy with a bomb in his turban blows up and kills at least five people at the memorial service for Karzai's brother. The mosque had been filled with relatives and friends of Ahmed Wali Karzai, half-brother to Hamid. Hamid was not at the memorial service. Continuing to defy the odds, Hamid Karzai is still alive, but his half-brother has been killed. The attacker appeared to be targeting Hekmatullah. The attacker, the suicide bomber with a bomb in his turban, by the way. For those of you at the TSA, I think you should be groping turbans more than six-year-olds. The attacker appeared to be targeting Hekmatullah Hekmat, the head of the provincial clerical council, who was indeed killed. So the Taliban proving to be a wily and effective fighting force there in that hell on earth known as Afghanistan. Not sure how you handle the Taliban. I just don't know. That's a really tough situation. I think you have to strike fear so deep into the hearts of those people that for five generations they'll never think about doing anything aggressive again. And the only way to do that, well, it's just very distasteful, I can tell you that. Nothing I would want to do, but if I had to do it, I suppose I would. Anyway, I have ideas on that, but they're probably controversial, so we'll leave those aside. Let's go to the politics file. This might be entertaining. Let me try this. New regulations kick in at the end of this year, the new energy efficiency standards, and they will eliminate incandescent light bulbs, leaving consumers to choose from more expensive bulbs, such as these squiggly compact fluorescent bulbs. This is a story from the Washington Times. That's right, folks. The incandescent light bulb, symbol of America's technological dominance of the world, is on its way out. It's going to be banned in America. Thomas Edison got to be spinning in his grave. So that's supposed to happen in January of 2012. Do we have any incandescents on hand? Just a few? We only have a few. We better get on it. We've got to go down to Walmart. And, you know, there's going to be riots in front of the light bulb section. People are going to be crawling over each other, stepping on one another's throats to get at the 100-watt incandescent light bulbs before too long. Let's see here. By the way, the Republicans in Congress, they tried to muster a vote to save the incandescent, and they lost. Why? Because too many of the Republicans are liberals. That's why. I have a quote from Edward Markey. He is a representative, a Democrat from Massachusetts, and he says regarding the impending passing on of the incandescent light bulb, he says, quote, "There's a point to this, and the point is it reduces the amount of greenhouse gases we have to send into our atmosphere. It reduces the amount of energy we have to think about importing from other countries," unquote. That's the point of banishing the incandescent light bulbs, is so that we don't emit greenhouse gases and that so we don't have to import energy from other countries. Okay. There's nothing amusing about that.
I don't get it.
I'm not on board. Is Edward J. Markey, Democrat, Massachusetts, is he a homosexual? Have you noticed that 90% of ecological greenies are homosexuals? Have you noticed? I'm going to have to do some research on this guy. You know what? On second thought, nah, forget about it. I'm not going to even. I'm just going to stock up on light bulbs, bullets, water, gold, MREs. What's that? Penicillin? No, I guess penicillin doesn't. That's not going to help anything. Yeah. If you go to Japan, you might want to bring some amoxicillin, penicillin, bacitracin. Let's go to Hawaii, ladies and gentlemen. As we close out the broadcast from Honolulu, a city bus stop has been temporarily moved so bus drivers and riders can get away from the smell of a homeless woman who was living in said bus stop. Yes. So this was a concrete bus shelter weighing several tons. It has been moved because it had become the home to an elderly homeless woman for at least the past year. One city official said, quote, "We were getting quite a few complaints from bus drivers about this woman's smell, and we're trying to be as sensitive as possible. So instead of going to this woman and saying, you might want to think about coming into a shelter, taking a shower, you've made some bad decisions in your life, can we help you? Are you familiar with the gospel of Jesus Christ, perhaps? No, they're going to move a concrete bus stop so that they can be sensitive to the lifestyle of this putrefying poor woman there in Hawaii. A bus driver told KITV 4 News that, quote, "The woman is sometimes so smelly that her odor wafts into buses when they open their doors. So naturally, the city has temporarily moved the bus stop 60 feet down the street to an area in front of a Kentucky Fried Chicken." So, and that's not even a punchline. That's just a part of the story, that they've opted for the wafting odors of Kentucky Fried Chicken rather than this putrefying woman who obviously needs help. One woman, a student at nearby Heald College, one Elena Renahan, a student there at the college, says, quote, "While the smell sometimes is a bit much, I don't understand why someone doesn't help her. At which point I wanted to say, hey, Elena, how about you help her? You know, what do you mean, why doesn't someone help her? You smelled her. You help her. Are we all incapable of helping one another anymore?" Anyway, I mean, have Americans lost the ability to help one another? Must we rely on the government to help? And look what their solution is. It's not to hose this woman down and get her some counseling. It's to move the bus stop so we don't have to tolerate her stench. The transformation continues, ladies and gentlemen. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. With God's grace, I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, where I guest hosted with Bob this week. You should check that out. Of course, my good friends at Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, and American Right to Life. And as always, my other brother there, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.